I'm Councillor Andrew Brown, elected in May in the Hengrove and Whitchurch Park ward in the city, along with my two Lib Dem colleagues. My background is, well, obviously, you can tell I'm not a native Bristolian. I come from Fife in Scotland, but I've been in Bristol for over a decade now. I've been in the southwest of England for 15 years. Prior to being elected, I worked in financial services in the back office of a financial planner, writing reports and doing analysis on client circumstances and plans. And since the election, I have become essentially a full-time councillor. I am the deputy leader of the Lib Dem group. I am now chair of the audit committee on Bristol City Council. I'm also a member of the Fire Authority and one of the planning committees.
Okay, well, you've recently lost one of your former leaders, Gary Hopkins, who's left because he felt there was too much financial interference in his ward. That, you know, the money raised by councillors to fight their wards, he thinks should be their own sort of pot of money in order to campaign within their wards. So what do you make of Gary going, and why do you think he's gone? What he's basically saying is there's been a move at the Lib Dems to control money more centrally for the whole city. But you can understand why, you know, Lib Dems have traditionally been campaigning, you know, and actually won cities like this city through campaigning very strongly in their own areas. And now they're not allowed to control the finances within their own areas.
Well, I mean, that's a party matter more than a council group matter. But essentially, in common with other parties, as I understand it, councillors make a contribution from their council allowances towards the campaigning activities of the local party. Gary has in recent years taken a different view on how that money should be prioritised. That's his business, and he's decided to act in the way he has and remove himself from the group. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate, but that's where we are. It doesn't stop the Liberal Democrats in the city from campaigning in our wards and, you know, and in other our health wards and other wards across the city, and advancing the ideas of liberalism, both locally and nationally.
Yeah. Okay. So the Polish have got a saying, or at least I've heard from Polish people, when you don't know what it's about the money, and it doesn't just apply to what's going on down in Knowle and Gary Hopkins deciding that he wants to. It would be interesting to see how he gets on, of course, in the local elections and whether the Lib Dems actually stand a candidate against Gary.
I can assure you now we will be standing a candidate in Knowle ward, or candidates in Knowle ward in the next local elections.
Yeah, well, that will be an interesting result, won't it? So But more importantly, the money, in fact, far, far more of it. I mean, we're really only talking about, you know, small potatoes compared to the budget of the mayor's office. Now, we have a lot of discussion about the mayor, particularly early this year because of the referendum the Lib Dems have managed to get going coming up in May. But very little presence out there in the Bristol Post, on the BBC, on ITV, about this forthcoming battle. It's almost as if someone somewhere has decided they don't really want to take much notice of it. Or maybe the campaigners have simply not got going yet. But it is very important what's been going on with the mayor, extremely important. It's been a massive change in the way Bristol's run. In fact, various people have pointed out that Boris Johnson is easier to remove by the Conservative Party than Marvin Rees, Bristol's mayor, is to remove by the Labour Party. They can't get rid of him even if they wanted to. So can you give us an idea of, you know, just what's going on with the budget for the mayor's office itself?
Yeah, so in I mean, the mayor's office budget has ballooned, or the budget for the office for the mayor, and it's ballooned from what it was under the leadership cabinet and leadership model prior to the mayoral model being invented. And beyond that, there's the mayor operates a number of additional, you know, there's the one city arrangements, and granted they do bring in funds from elsewhere, but it's essentially a shadow form of governance for the city, and nobody, you know, and it sort of lacks a great deal of scrutiny. So when things are proposed within council, they quite often make reference to the One City Aims, but the One City Aims themselves are not council, you know, do not originate within the council. So the mayor's budget has ballooned, along with PR activities of the council.
Yeah, well, this is almost starting to sound a bit corporate, you know. You're like, but anyway, starting with the actual amount of money that the mayor is spending on himself and his staff and the budget for the office every year?
I don't have the precise figures to hand, because one of the unfortunate things with this year's budget, it wasn't line by line, so we don't have a sort of complete breakdown of everything, but it was noticeable that each of the opposition groups, when looking at amendments to the budget, all looked at making a cut to the mayor's team, to the budget for his office, in order to fund other things within the city, whether that be incend, public toilets, reversing a proposed charge on disabled parking base being installed, all sorts of things that were in the budget that could be reversed by means of a cut to the mayor's office.
Okay, so how many staff does he have? Do we know how much they're paid?
As I say, I've not got the figures to hand. I understand that the office, the staffing, number of staff is in double digits within the mayor's office. You know, and I imagine they get paid a range of salaries from, well, we know that his head political advisor gets paid a six-figure salary. But I imagine, you know, that there are staff from, you know, all grades within his office.
Are we talking about Kevin Slocum?
Yes.
Because I think it's just also useful to name these people because, you know, as we know, in national politics, we've got all these special advisors kind of swarming around who maybe you never hear their name for many years, and the media actually don't do their job in scrutinising these people anywhere near enough.
I mean, that is one of the problems of national politics. The growth again has happened over the past two or three decades, perhaps. But the growth in the number of special advisors, and you tend to only hear about them when, you know, when they start interfering when their interference in political affairs becomes newsworthy. So I remember under Thatcher with Charles Powell, and differences between him and Nigel Lawson. You know, there was obviously under Blair, Alistair Campbell had held a great deal of sway, and so on and so forth. And you're right, a lot of the time, you know, there's a lot of people in the background that maybe aren't, you know, that are maybe holding a great deal of influence, but not having accountability or scrutiny.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that quite a lot of people have said about Marvin Rees, the Bristol mayor, is that, yeah, he has several people behind the scenes that make many of the, well, they don't make the decisions. No, they recommend the decisions that Marvin then follows. Anyway, look, this is an interesting time of year. We're in February 2022. It's certainly interesting for people like you, I imagine, with a background in finance, is that it's when all of the kind of negotiations take place for the budget for the next year, beginning on the 1st of April this year. So I know that this is being discussed at the council meetings, the full council at the moment. Can you just take us through what's been going on in the council meetings?
Yeah, so, I mean, we had full budget council on Tuesday night, which ended in an unresolved position. And as far as there was, the mayor proposed his budget, and there were 9 amendments proposed, of which I think 4, maybe 5 passed. At the end of the night, the power is reverted to the mayor, who can decide whether to accept the amended budget and have that put to a vote, or whether he needs more time to deliberate. And he opted for the latter. So now there are, so now we will have a second budget meeting on the 2nd of March. And there's 3 possible scenarios at that meeting. The first is that the mayor will accept the amended budget, or the budget as amended by the meeting just gone, in which case we will have a vote on that budget. And if it passes by a simple majority, then the council will have set that budget for the coming year. There are 2 alternatives. The first is that the mayor brings back his original proposals and seeks to try and pass those again. And the second is that he brings an altered budget. So there's two alternatives. The first is that three options. So he brings back the amended budget, he brings back his original proposals, or he brings back an alternative budget, which he might make changes to his original proposals, maybe in conjunction with one or other of the opposition groups. And council will then debate those. If it passes, we were basically not allowed to end the meeting until we have passed a balanced budget for the year to come. But there are other consequences, because along with the budget, there are other things that need set. So we've got the housing revenue account budget to set for the coming year, which includes things like the rents for council homes, as well as additional proposals for further investment in our council housing. And there's also the dedicated schools grant and the schools budget to agree. Now, the schools budget should have been agreed by the 28th of February, notified to the schools, to the Department for Education, and we will miss that deadline, which is an unfortunate accident of scheduling. As far as I can tell, it appears that the due consideration wasn't given to that deadline when setting the date for the reserve budget meeting.
Well, what you're insinuating here is that they don't know what they're doing.
Well, and it suggests that the council is now going to miss a statutory deadline. And, you know, whether that's been an accident of scheduling or an oversight, or whether it's been felt that deadline, you know, wasn't sufficiently important as to alter the proposed dates for meetings, I don't know. But that's the situation we have ended up in as a council.
Well, maybe it's because education is not a priority in the mayor's office.
I wouldn't go that far, but it is true that we do have there are a series of substantial pressures within the education budget, and particularly with regards to providing places for kids with special educational needs and disabilities. And we have a backlog of assessments to be done with regards to education, health and care plans.
Well, maybe it's just that that there isn't enough money in that budget and the figures don't add up. So they can't really say, oh, here's your budget, when there isn't enough money in it for these statutory needs.
The budget has, I mean, the budget for those, for that element of council spending is part of the overall budget setting process. So, so there is a budget there, albeit there are extreme pressures. But you know, it is no secret that Bristol has had problems with regards to funding, particularly for those kids with significant additional needs over the years, and that, you know, we are still working through those problems and, you know, seeking to dedicate sufficient resources to them. One of the amendments that one of the elements of the amendment I moved at council on Tuesday was to increase funding for SENS, capital funding for SENS, in order to increase the number of places available within schools. But unfortunately, that did not pass.
So I'm interested also, Andrew, as someone who's come from the world of money into politics, what you make of that transition, whether you're enjoying your job as a councillor, your work as a councillor, and also, you know, what you have as a financial person, what you make of the way things are run here in Bristol?
That's a hugely interesting question. I mean, I am really enjoying being a councillor. It's allowed me to look at the city with fresh eyes with regards to the sort of city level elements of being a councillor. And I'll come back to that in a moment. But I also enjoy the elements of being a ward councillor and helping people with their issues and navigating council services. But with regards to looking at how things are run, it is, you know, having spent my life in the private sector in companies, you know, ranging from the very small to large household names, it is fascinating to come into the public sector and observe how things are done, and the sort of different culture that there is within the public sector. But generally, you know, when dealing with people at an individual level, people are all, you know, the officers that I've dealt with have been, you know, and seeking to do their best to fulfil the brief that we give them as a council, and to advance the development of their departments, to provide the service to the citizens of the city.
I mean, is there anything specific that has surprised or shocked you?
Not yet. There are obviously, I think, you know, like starting any job, there is a learning curve whilst you get a real feel for the lie of the land, build up relationships with individuals and get a feel for where different people are coming from. And that is sort of part of the phase that I sort of feel like coming towards the end of. There has been nothing that's particularly surprised or shocked me as such, certainly in terms of the way officers do things. But there is an element whereby the political decisions, you know, you can sort of see how, for example, how Bristol Energy decisions around that have been made at a political level, but how they've allowed to be sort of implemented and how it was allowed to come to the point that it came to. One thing I did have an issue with recently was that there was a decision made with regards to Hengrove Park development, and which is in the ward that I represent, and that was made by press release without the councillors being briefed, and we had to fight very hard to get a briefing on that, And by the time the briefing was made, further announcements had been made with regards to the council's intentions for the site. And that was quite frustrating.
So woman, what does that particular decision teach you about the way Bristol City Council's run?
Well, it suggests that on occasion, ward councillors aren't given the... Because the council is focused around the administration and the cabinet, you know, and what the mayor and cabinet want, at times ward councillors aren't given the perhaps the recognition or the respect that they deserve. You know, the Hengrove ward, the Hengrove Park development is a major development, not just in Hengrove ward, Hengrove and Whitchurch Park ward, but also in the south of the city. It was a controversial decision made to develop the park originally. And there's a lot of local interest in that. And when things are press released and put into the media, people quite rightly come to their local councillors, you know, wanting to know what's going on. And it's, you know, very unsatisfactory as a local councillor to be, you know, to have to say, all we know is what you know. All we've seen is what's, you know, what's in the press.
The thing to say to people who are voting for you is, well, you voted for this mayor system, I suppose. And there's quite a lot of money gets spent on our councillors. I do wonder sometimes, Andrew, what is the point of voting for councillors when they don't really have much of a say at all and they're shut out of the decisions?
Well, I mean, that's the crux of the issue, isn't it? With regards to the mayoral referendum, that's you know part of the reason we've ended up in this position whereby you know we've had council now vote across the board. Well, I say across the board, across the opposition parties in favour of holding this referendum in order to refer to a system that does put power back in the hands of councillors. And gives the councillors the power that a lot of people think they already have. You know, there are other reasons to vote for local councillors because, you know, we do have an important part to play in local communities, working with community groups, helping them achieve, you know, helping them get funding from council, whether that be through community infrastructure levy, beds, or through other means, helping, as I say, local residents with individual concerns, you know, when it comes to working with, you know, accessing housing or, you know, where they've got transport issues or any of the other things that are within the council's remit, liaising with local police, you know, with regards to dealing with antisocial behaviour, working with other agencies, you know, that provide services to our residents. So there's a suite of things that councillors can do that we're uniquely positioned to do that, that if we didn't have councillors, people would miss. And then, of course, there's the regulatory committees on which we serve, whether that be planning or licensing, which are, again, things that can't be done by the administration, and do share power across the chamber to some extent. But yes, what's, you know, the crux of the issue is that, you know, if we had a committee system of governance across the city, all that executive power, which is currently just in the hands of the mayor, would also be spread and local councillors would have a share, a part of that and a part of deciding how the future of the city you know, is shaped.
On this particular one on the budget, well done for pulling up. I mean, I find it staggering, really, that we're seeing less and less lines in that budget. I mean, how can you... Don't you wonder how is it possible to have a proper budget debate when some of the sort of subtotals and subheadings aren't even in there?
Yeah, and this was a point made by councillors across the chamber on Tuesday night. And it was brought up by, I believe it was in part of the resources scrutiny statement to full budget council as well. This year's budget, I'm told, has been developed later than ever before, and did lack a great deal of detail, which made it the more difficult when it comes to opposition parties putting to gather amendments, because, you know, how do you know exactly where you can target your, you know, target the cuts or savings that you feel should be made, versus you know, the spending that you feel is required, when you don't have the, you know, the same level of detail as the mayor's office has in planning that, and you've also got a much more limited amount of time, and you've got fewer officers to help on your behalf. Your hands are, you know, you're operating with, you know, one hand tied behind your back when it comes to putting together amendments to our budget. You know, where that level of detail is not available.
Yeah, but there's nothing you can do about it, am I right? Even if all of the opposition parties across the city, with the Greens and the Tories too, are all saying, well, hang on, this isn't a proper budget. Where's the detail?
There's a limited amount that can be done about it. You know, those complaints have been fed back, whether it produced, you know, whether they'll be acted on next year, I guess, remains to be seen. But yeah, it's, you know, like I say, it's frustrating. It's you know, ultimately, the mayor and his cabinet will publish what they'll publish.
Well, sounds to me like they're just concentrating more and more power in the centre. Well, how is it going to go? You've got three different options to the way the budget's going to go. Which way do you think it's going to go, Andrew?
I mean, if I was a betting man, if I was the mayor, what I would seek to do is speak to the opposition groups and put together an alternative to his originally proposed budget that is, you know, that would command sufficient votes within the chamber as to pass. I have no special knowledge as to whether, I'm not aware of him having a group approached our group. I have no knowledge of whether he's approached either the Greens or the Tories with regards to doing that. As yet, but that's what my reckoning is, that there will be some form of alternative budget that will be proposed with enough changes to the original budget as to make it more palatable to one or other of the groups and allow it to pass full council.
And then in May, I mean, that's all about the budget starting at the beginning of the next financial year at 1st of April. But in May, which way do you think the vote is going to go on whether or not to keep the mayor?
Well, I'll be working very hard to have a vote to move to a committee system. I know that in my ward, that will be the majority opinion, without a shadow of a doubt. And I suspect that that's true of a lot of wards across the city. The campaigns will be getting underway in earnest once this budget process is complete. You know, the budget process has been using up a lot of bandwidth for councillors across all the political groups. And I suspect that once it's out of the way, you will really see a ramp up in activity both in the media, in social media, and on the doorsteps across the city. And I very much will be fighting to win that referendum. And I think that the balance of probabilities is that the city will agree. After 10 years of having had the mayoral system that hasn't delivered all the benefits that were touted for it, and that the drawbacks outweigh any benefits it may have had in some people's eyes.
Well, hang on, it has had benefits if you're a property speculator.
But I'm afraid I'm merely a renter rather than a property speculator. You know, there will be people who will feel that it's had benefits and they will make their case. And I anticipate we'll see a number of prominent voices doing so. But equally, we will see prominent voices on the other side arguing that it's not delivered. It's not delivering what it should deliver, that the political landscape has changed. We now have a regional mayor, and that's where the focus for future funding deals from central government will be. And, you know, we'll see that, you know, the former mayor, our first mayor, George Ferguson, has even turned his back on the system. And I think that speaks volumes in and of itself.
Okay, Andrew, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.